I know there aren't just two of you on the panel. We're also looking for Libby, who is on her way, and Josh Wiersma. Okay, welcome to panel three on ACE trading and usage. I'll introduce the panel members again. We've got Hank Sewell, who's the Sustainable Harvest Sector Manager, Cindy Smith, who's the Tri-State Sector Manager, Dan Salerno, who's Manager of Seafood Coalition Sector 5. We've got Aaron Doherty, who's the Manager of the Northeast Coastal Community Sector, Libby Eatry, once again, standing in for Sector 3, and Jim Reardon, who's the manager of Seafood Coalition Sectors 6 and 10. So I didn't actually take a volunteer for this one, who wants to go first, but if you want to start maybe with a description of how ACE trading worked in your sector, or any difficulties you might have encountered with the ACE trading system. I can start with you since you just talked. Yeah.
Okay. I think that everybody knows that under the sector management system, discards were dramatically reduced, and I think that's one thing that folks universally thought was a good thing about this system. In our experience, probably the second thing that worked very well was ACE trading. It was absolutely critical to the success of our sector. If ACE trading was not allowed between vessels, all but one vessel in our sector would have been shut down before the end of the fishing year. So that's a very important point. It certainly was a much bigger component of sector management than I understood it would be as a manager at the beginning of the year. We ended up trading 13 or 14 million pounds of allocation total, both within the sector among members and to and from other sectors as well. It was an absolutely critical part, I think, of catch balancing for individuals in our sector, and also I think you could say for different segments of the industry. We saw in the fall, in the winter of the last fishing year, a rather steady flow of Gulf of Maine cod and later on some Gulf of Maine haddock moving from some of the larger offshore boats in our sectors to other smaller boats, both in our sector and to other sectors. For whatever reason, demand was very high, and prices, particularly for Gulf of Maine cod, were very high. It was in great demand, and those boats needed that ACE, and we had it and were able to send it to them. And conversely, when Middlebank was closed at the end of the fishing year, I think there were a lot of small boats working out of northern Massachusetts and New Hampshire ports that all of a sudden found, whoops, they had more cod ACE than they actually could use and more they could carry forward into the following fishing year. And they ended up sending some back our way, which means that we were basically writing checks to them for that ACE. So when I just looked at the flow of fish, we dealt with, I think, virtually every sector, every active fishing sector that there was in one time or another. A lot of fish was sent to folks, and a lot of folks sent fish back to us. And I just found it to be a very robust and active trading market. In the beginning of the year, of course, nobody really understood what the value of a pound of cod was or the value of a pound of haddock. It wasn't a well-established market, and a lot of folks who've been in this business for a while made this analogy that this is just like under the first year of days at sea leasing. Nobody understands what a day is worth. But really, 6 months into it, I think that the marketplace was very well-defined, and the sector managers up here were communicating back and forth, at least on a weekly basis, if not more frequently, talking about what they had available, what their members were seeking, what they thought prices were doing. And I think that the market defined itself very well. An electronic platform for ACE trading was developed by a third party, but I don't think that it ever had a whole lot of use. I'm not quite sure why that is. All of the sectors, I think, had sort of variations of a right of first refusal that might be 5 days or might be 7 days or perhaps even longer. And our sector revisited that concept toward the end of the fishing year, and that the members seemed to like that. They liked the idea that they had the first shot at some fish that was being offered up in the sector. And if somebody wanted to take the deal, that was great. And otherwise, they would put it out to the wide world. A lot of trades were conducted in the beginning of the year, I think in part because folks didn't understand exactly what the value of a pound of fish was. But as the year moved on, at least in our sector, I saw the value of fish moved away from trades of, you know, which flounder for a codfish or whatever the case may be, under more of a currency basis, you know, understanding that cod was, let's say, 1 to 125 a pound, different prices for different products. You know, when you got into some of the high ACE stocks, the high allocation stocks like Georgia's Bank Haddock, I saw prices as low of a tenth of a penny per pound last year. So there's a real wide range in the prices, as you would expect. So really, overall, we found that the ACE market developed quickly. It was very active, and we thought it was very liquid. Our folks in our sector were used to acquiring fishing rights in the forms of days at sea before. So this really to them was not really much different. Before I was acquiring days at sea, now I need to acquire ACE of various stocks. And the only question was, how do I determine the value of that? I think by the end of the year, they had a very good idea.
Let's see, we can go down the line this time.
Okay, thanks. But, all right, it sounds like it does work, though, the way it's supposed to. All right, so I manage the tri-state sector. We're almost the complete opposite of Hank's sector. We're very small. We only do, we didn't do nearly the number of trips that he did. ACE trading was, people were pretty cautious about it. We had a couple of deals go through very early in the year for cash, but then later in the year when the seller discovered what he could have gotten for it, he was really annoyed and felt like he got cheated. I was going to echo what Hank said, that an online posting board was created by a third party, but nobody really used it. They seem to prefer dealing with people they're used to dealing with or just letting their sector manager handle their trades. I had a couple others. These are pretty much just sort of facts how it went for my group. The sector manager was asked to lease or negotiate on the fisherman's behalf. Fisherman says, you know what, just lease it. I'm not going to be able to fish it. Get whatever you can for it. They didn't want to be involved. The other alternative was that I'd find out from another sector manager that a deal had been made and we needed to go ahead and execute that transfer. And regarding the right of first refusal, it's a really challenging issue, I think. I think it works well for the sectors to help give them the opportunity to access the ACE before it leaves the sector. But for anyone who's willing to post their allocation at a low enough price, some guys just may not ever get to access it. And that made the right of first refusal particularly challenging. And that's I managed the Port Clyde sector last year, and I can tell you that more of the trades in that sector were fish for fish, trading yellowtail for cod or whatever they needed. And people seemed more comfortable at that level because, again, the uncertainty on what a pound of fish was worth. That's about it.
Just a note, this year I am the sector manager for Northeast Fishery Sector 5, the Point Judith, one of the Point Judith trawl sectors. But last year I was the sector manager for Northeast Fishery Sector 2, which was the Gloucester trawl. Gloucester trawl sector was a very active sector last year. I had to deal with over 300 trades, internal and external trades, so these guys were pretty active. We did deal with every sector, every other sector. I had one member that actually dealt with every other sector. So it was a very high volume, high trading sector. Some of the issues that surrounded with the trading that we had to deal with was, for one, which was brought up earlier, was the mid-season corrections. With the Pollock and with the Georges Bank Yellowtail last year, trades were made based on what the value was of these stocks, what fishermen perceived to be the value of these stocks at the beginning of the year. The sixfold increase of Pollock obviously made me go back and revisit some of the deals. Well, the members made me go back and revisit deals. And that was also the same as the Georges Bank Yellowtail stocks. And to kind of note on that, I understand that mid-season corrections are a result of, you know, almost near real-time management system. But we do need to realize that there are positives, but there are consequences when it comes to mid-season corrections. You know, for the future, I would like to see something more of, you know, put it out there, but let's address it in the next fishing year. You know, one of the things that was brought up earlier in one of these panels was the need for stability. If there's an ability to change what a sector has for an ace in the mid-season, that is not a very stable platform for sectors to be working in. Dealing with trades, obviously, at the end of the year, we had a lot of trades that ended up selling off our stocks because sectors, you know, left a lot of fish on the table. So in order to maximize what they had, although it was at a discounted price, I was trying to sell off to other sectors what we had left over. What that kind of brings up related to this was that this sector and most of the Northeast fishery sectors and probably all the sectors had some type of reserve. Ours was a 10% reserve, and that was based on the 10% carryover. But what I found was the 10% reserve is really not a good number to use, because if the data reconciliation isn't up to standard, you're now talking about maybe we need to put aside 15% or maybe even 20% to deal with the conflict in numbers between the sector manager and the National Marine Fisheries Service. Also related to trades, in the year-end reports, in the guidance document that we received, we were supposed to provide a whole host of information, some of it quite understandable, some of it not so. One of those things was that the member's name associated with each trade. Personally, I don't understand what you were trying to get at there. As you see in some of the presentations that was done earlier today, it would probably have been useful to know more information about those trades, perhaps an MRI number so you can actually link the trade from vessel class to vessel class, you know, stuff like that. But providing a member's name really, to me, doesn't really provide anyone with any information. As you'll see, if you've seen the reports, NEFS 2, the board of directors requested they did not want their names in there. That's why it says member A to member B or member 1 to member 2. I did the year-end report for NEFS 5. Obviously, they were a little more reasonable with it. They had no problems with it, so the names were put in there. But just keep in mind, when you're requesting information, a manager may or may not be willing to give it to you, but ultimately it's not our ability to do that. We have to answer to a board of directors. So anytime people are coming for information, we just can't give it to you. Obviously, we have to go through a chain of command on our end as well. Also, in speaking to the ACE usage, the 20% holdback that we had at the beginning of this fishing year wasn't very good. I mean, I understood the reason behind it, and obviously with the reconciliation process starting so late, basically, those 60 days locked up some stocks for some sectors that really that was the only time for them to access them in that May and June time period. That kind of left a lot of fish, will potentially leave a lot of fish on the table for these sectors. But hopefully with the reconciliation occurring right now, starting at the beginning of the year, maybe we can revisit that 60-day window to kind of at least shorten it to give an opportunity for at least the holdback to be addressed so these guys can get their full or their full allocation at the beginning of next fishing year. Thank you.
So my sector is definitely quite a bit smaller than most of the others in terms of the amount of ACE and the number of fishermen in the sector. However, it's been really helpful to lease ACE. Last year was definitely a bit different than this year in terms of our leasing strategy. I think that members last year, because of the new system, they were just kind of leery to be really gung-ho with it and didn't lease in ACE. But this year, that's changed, and we've relied more on swapping fish rather than trading, you know, fish for money. So that's been helpful. And actually, I think the more that sectors do that, you know, the better off everyone is, because it's beneficial for all sectors, and it you don't have the fish being treated so much as a commodity, more as you know, as something that's necessary in order to conduct the fishing trips. One of the concerns that sector members had in my sector was the cost of ACE, and some of them felt like, well, with Gulf of Maine cod, for example, being a directed fishery for them, that at the price that it was, that they just couldn't touch it. They felt like it was out of their range, and the price is driven by a number of different factors. I mean, it's based on the price to the boat. It's based on the economics behind that, and also the competition in the marketplace, obviously, the economics, whether other fishermen are targeting that stock primarily or using it as bycatch, and probably a number of other factors as well. But that's just a challenge that I mentioned. I think that my members also, you know, looking toward the long term, they and I think a lot of fishermen feel this way, that they want to see as many active fishermen as possible in the leasing market rather than armchair fishermen. I know that's sort of a concern. I don't know if it's a valid concern at this point or not, since I think a lot of the, you know, most of the trading, hopefully most of the trading, is between active fishermen. So if, you know, if that is a concern long term, I don't know what the solution necessarily would be, whether economics would just keep that under check, or whether there's a regulatory approach to it, or whether it may not actually be an issue at all down the road. But anyway, the pretty fluid leasing market and the active communication between all the sector members last year and this year, I think, has been really helpful and conducive for a pretty successful fishery overall.
Hi again. I'm just, as mentioned, I'm filling in for Nick Brinclione. So I think as it relates to trading and ACE transfers, I'm just going to read some of the portions from the annual report he submitted to the agency, because it kind of captures what happened. For the most part, Northeast Fishery Sector 3 vessels negotiated trades, other harvest share amongst themselves and with members of other sectors. The members were encouraged to negotiate their own deals and then come to Nick, who would follow the protocol for account verification and right of first refusal. In addition, the sector did task the manager to take on additional roles of coordinating trades to maximize the effectiveness of ACE trading. The communication among the sector managers were vital throughout the fishing year, as everyone was learning how to negotiate ACE transfers and what this meant within the new system. So the majority of the transactions that occurred within the sector were a combination of either fish for fish for money, or fish for something else. A lot of the members traded, primarily the members were involved in trading of fish in order to increase their ability to target ground fish on specific stocks, predominantly Gulf of Maine cod. Some members did trade for reasons other than accessing more activity to go out fishing. Some members traded because they knew members within their sectors needed fish that they may or may not need. Let's see, what else? Just really quickly summarizing. As Dan had mentioned, Northeast Fishery Sector 3 has a right of first offer process. The members found that to be incredibly helpful because it ensured a confidence that they knew that before Fish left the sector that they had the opportunity and that they had a knowledge of what was going on, because in the end the sector is jointly and severally held liable. So the fishing activities of one can severely impact the activities of others. So they appreciated knowing that they had the opportunity to kind of jump on a deal that potentially a fish that could be leaving the sector. I think that's, as for one difficulty, it's mentioned, and I think it's in the letter that Nick had sent, this kind of goes with ACE trading, but other things as well. Sector managers are asked to do a lot of things. They're also at times asked to do a lot of things after the fact. As mentioned by Mark, the guidance for the annual report came out 24 days after the close of the fishing year, and then sectors are being asked to provide trading information, internal leasing, external with other sectors. And for a lot of managers, especially internal, they weren't collecting that information, and so to then be asked to compile it for a year is a monumental task, which takes them away from their primary responsibilities. I think just as a general matter, when it comes to specific data sets people may be thinking about, including ACE transfers, start from the moment you ask. Don't ask the managers to go back in time, because you're just basically taking them away from their responsibilities. And that was for especially a sector that had a lot of internal transfers, a lot of external transfers, that's a time constraint that they're just one person. So I'll just mention that as a difficulty after the fact.
Good afternoon. Yes, I manage two very diverse sectors, but the ACE is managed on an individual basis. Several fishermen have multiple permits. Several fishermen do a lot of trading. Several fishermen do no trading at all. Several fishermen need to be prompted to trade, and we're trying to use 100% of the ACE within the sectors. It's not always possible to do that. But we have a practice, too, where we set up a pool in the sector, and I call it the nooks and crannies, and I go dig out those permits that have, 200 pounds or 300 pounds of this. We try to make it a viable financial gain for these individuals. The process, I want to focus on the process, how it works within the framework. I mean, I think Libby touched upon it and several other people have touched upon it. This wouldn't have worked if we didn't have this bond of trust amongst the sector managers. Everybody gets along real well. Everybody's very professional. We are not the traders. We execute the trades, but we are not the traders. We're not looked upon as brokers. Most of the fishermen will go and make their own trades on their own. They'll either meet with an individual that they've done business with in the past, or they'll ask the sector manager to try to go find them some ACE. We're constantly getting emails from all the other sector managers on a daily basis, and we make sure that information gets out to all the members, so that every member has a chance to secure the ACE. We have a process also in the NESA network, which I think is a very good process. We call it ROFO. It's a right of first offer, wherein we have, if a trade is made going outside the sector, whether it be going outside the NESA network or outside the sector, we have a six-day waiting period, meaning that the sector network has 3 days in which they can make an offer on the fish, but the right of first offer transpires to the individual sector so that they always have that opportunity even up to the six-day point, and all those points are very well defined. So what we do is when we collect the information, my job is to communicate, is to concisely make sure that there's a meeting of the minds with both parties, and we normally put that in writing so that when the transaction does take place, there's no questions. It works. It's one of the, and the SIM module has been a, SIM module has worked very well. It's one of the, I remember the first trade I made last year, and the other sector manager was on the other line, and we made the trade right online, and he said that's the first thing that NIMS has done this year that works. It works. And I can't emphasize too much that, you're seeing all this ACE trading going along, and with ACEs, I use the analogy of playing hockey. I used to play a lot of hockey, and the ACEs, we got to protect the ACE, and all these other issues coming out to take away ACE. And Mark Grant brought up, I never heard the notion of precise assumed discards before. Precision in that process. That's always been a bone on my side relative to, you know, protecting these guys. Ace, they don't have enough fish to begin with. You know, why are we worrying about discards? You know, let's give them some ace to go fishing. You know, it's costing them too much money. People are spending an awful lot of money, and that's where my heart goes out. I look at $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $100,000 to go lease ace. They're already in the hole before they have to go. They can go secure that fish. This system is very expensive for these people. You know, there's no more $2 blackjack tables. You know, everybody gets a $100 blackjack table. You come with $100, you got a chance to go fishing one time. You know, we have guys in my. I have 51 permits in Sector 10, and I would probably guesstimate that probably 15 of those permits have less than 5,000 pounds of total allocation. And we have allocations of which we will never use. Georges Bank East, for example, Georges Bank East haddock. You know, some of the Georges Bank yellowtail. I'm not trying to get off on another tangent, but I mean, this is all relative. This is the reason that we have to do this. We have to trade ace because of these allocations, and it's costing these guys an awful lot of money. And I think it's been emphasized here today, but you know, the other thing is we have this shadow in the background of, you know, this could turn into something different unless we try to fix this thing now. You know, we need some direct action on this. You know, so that these people can actually stay in business. You know, this is costing them an awful lot of money, and I don't have all that information relative to that. But you know, the ace trading process. You know, the guy's $20,000. You know, a guy made a deal last week. He's $20,000 in the hole before he even goes fishing. You know, price of codfish is $2. You know, he's catching haddock for $1.25. I mean, he's got to make up that $20,000. This is a very, very, very difficult game for these guys to be playing. But, you know, anyways, getting back to managing ace, that's part of it. You know, that's part of it. We have to be in tune with who's got ace, who doesn't have ace, how are they going to fix this, where they're going to correct this. You know, and I remember a case last year we had a guy went over like 200 pounds of dabs. You know, it was like in May, and we're all upset about it. You know, 200 pounds of dabs, and it turns out it wasn't a big deal at all. But, I mean, the operations plan dictates to us that we as sector managers have to do that. And we had to adapt. We continuously had to adapt, you know. And I think the one thing that is working is the ace trading, although it's the expense of the whole process is, I think, ludicrous. I guess that's pretty much it. I probably said more than I'm supposed to say. That's usually the case. But I don't know. I just want to emphasize, too, that, you know, we are very fortunate. The council's very fortunate. The agent's very fortunate because of the people that collectively ended up to be sector managers. You know, they're a great bunch of people, and they adapted and they worked their tails off. You know, we were tracking ace on programs that didn't work. You know, we tried to make it work. It all adapted. It all worked out well. And you know, but why? You know, we got the recreational sector that doesn't have any discards. It doesn't have to track ace. It doesn't have to spend money to go fishing. You know, there's a lot of management uncertainty and scientific uncertainty that could be corrected just in that sector alone. That's all.
No, you said enough. Perfect. So I think I just want to reiterate. I mean, most of these gentlemen have really covered a lot of the basics. What is my microphone on? Does it sound funny?
Ladies, gentlemen.
And lady, excuse me.
Hello.
Ladies. I apologize, ladies. That was a result of my third panel being up here and getting sick and hearing myself speak. So, but I do want to emphasize that one of the most pleasant surprises was the relationships that were formed with the other sector managers throughout the year. I think that was a critical component of being able to trade ace effectively in an efficient manner with confidence, so that you knew when you had a deal that deal was going to be executed, you know, without any type of legal involvement in these transactions. You know, the way we worked out our trading was we have a pool of fishermen who are active, meaning that they actively fish their ace, and we have another pool of fishermen who are inactive. We would first and foremost try to allocate the fish from the inactive members to our active fishermen. And as I mentioned before, the sectors, they really operate as a team concept. And, you know, not only do the inactive members, you know, want to sell their ace to the other guys in their sector, but, you know, and a lot of times, you know, they would accept less money to do so. I effectively acted as a broker. I told they would either tell me what they needed for fish, and I would try to find it for them at the best rate possible. I advised them on what quota was selling for routinely. I advised them on what they could lease fish, trade fish for, the ratios that were being advertised or were being evolved during the course of the season. Whatever we couldn't afford to purchase in our sector, we would advertise out of our sector. We actually became a net seller of fish by the end of the year. And what I thought was interesting, though, was this idea that, you know, at the end of the year, when some sectors realized that they needed fish to balance their books, you know, I think some people would have predicted that that would give sectors an opportunity to leverage their quota to the other sector, because they couldn't go over. You know, it's a rule now. But what I found is that sector managers were actually more willing at this time to help other sector managers, and would even sell fish at cheaper rates than you would see it sell during the course of the season. So that was very interesting to me, and maybe a pleasant surprise or a gesture of reciprocity that you would expect that would happen. If you were in need of the same type of favor, really, the following year, the right of first offer is an important. I think it's a critical part of trading. You know, for whatever reason, some sector members might not be aware that, or in a position at certain times to purchase ace, or realize that it was leaving the sector. This gave them all a window to act upon that or put themselves in a better position to purchase ace before it left the sector. And again, you know, this idea of ace being allocated to the sectors, I also believe is a benefit because it created a de facto pool of quota, especially for the choke stocks. And so it really reduced the anxiety of fishermen who thought that they might exceed their minimal bycatch quota stocks. So, for example, we target a lot of our Gulf of Maine cod and fishermen of a very small amounts of flatfish. But in aggregate, there's enough flatfish to go around. And so, you know, if a fisherman exceeded some other flats, they were very confident that their other sector member would easily transfer that fish to them if they needed it. And I guess that's about it. We had a 10% holdback that worked well, and, you know, we were able to monitor our ace usage effectively throughout the year, and at some point during the course of the season, our board of directors made a decision that we were confident in our ace usage, that we wouldn't exceed our total ace allocation, and we allowed members to either fish or lease a portion of that holdback. So that's my experiences in a nutshell.
Thanks. We've got about 10 minutes left for questions, and clearly someone that really wants to ask one, so we'll start here.
I
I've had members complain it's not long enough. You're dealing with members that they're offshore fishermen. Their trip may be 6, 7, 8 days long, and they may miss the whole window for it. I've had other members say that, why 6 days? Just get it out there. You know, it's balancing between the needs of the fishermen. You know, the sector that I had last year was comprised of both day boats and an offshore fleet, so I had to kind of go to the highest common denominator, and I think my members were quite happy with the 6-day window, although some of them would like to have seen it a little longer.
Yeah, well, my question, can I follow up on?
It was something that I had to work out, and I made it available to all my offshore captains that if you want, I will let you know. And I was sending out through Boat Tracks any bona fide offers if they requested it, and that was what I had to do. And there were times where members did take it through the VMS chain that it did work that way, but it was something that I had to work out. Yes.
Okay, Hank wanted to respond to that quickly, and then over to Dr. Pierce.
I'll just reiterate what he said. You could send it out through Boat Tracks if you need to. You're right. There's a difference between folks who are on shore and folks who are at sea. And, of course, the right of first refusal is a totally voluntary thing for all the sectors. Our members seem to feel it was a good idea and 5 days was adequate.
We find ourselves in a position where fishermen who are very well financed, who have great financial resources they can draw upon, we find ourselves in a position where those individuals can snatch up permits, acquire fish that's available to be leased, therefore becoming dominant players and promoting or accelerating consolidation.
Who wants to go near that one? All right, Libby.
Well, just maybe as a slight point of clarification, I think that there are two types of right of first refusal. There's one that relates to the harvest share, the Northeast fishery sectors, we call it harvest share transfer, and then there's the right of first refusal with permit sales. Since this is about the ACE trading, I will say this is more from my observation and the few times that I've actually had to fill in for managers, it's a pretty fluid market, and it's pretty interesting to see. I think the largest challenge is not so much, again, this is my opinion, maybe the finances that individuals have available to them, but the utilization of new technology to know when fish is available. I mean, I think for a lot of managers and a lot of members, that was probably one of the biggest challenges. How do you communicate with a sector of 40 members when potentially a stock that they may need might be leaving the sector? I think that there are some situations where people felt as if there is individuals within sectors who are able to acquire, but I think for the most part, from what I've seen and in talking with, again, this is with members of Northeast Fishery Sector 3, everyone had an opportunity. Everyone also kind of knew on a given day or in a given week where their needs were, and a lot of them were facilitating their own transactions because they knew what the value meant to them for whatever it is they were trading. So I don't see that much. I can't say that. I just can't say that anyone who had a higher balance in their checkbook was better off than those. But that's just my observation. When that's just for the ACE trading.
Does anyone on the panel have a different opinion?
I kind of add to what Libby said. You know, basically what I saw last year is not many deals were taken through the right of first offer. It generally went to who the deal was originally set up with. And one of the things that I found is that in some of the instances where it was taken through right of first offer, where it was kept within the sector, It was very easy to find someone else that was willing to part with that. So eventually the deal would actually go through as originally intended. Because obviously if there's been a negotiated price, both members felt it was a pretty good deal, that there was always someone else willing to probably jump onto that deal.
Thanks. 60 seconds for one more question from the audience. Kraut.
I can say just a little bit about that. I think for my sector that the mid-season adjustment in Georges Bank Yellowtail, for example, the fishermen in my sector were all of a sudden going to be over on their yellowtail because all of a sudden the number that they'd been allocated changed. I think with pollock, I think it just completely changed the leasing market for pollock because all of a sudden it went from being a potential choke stock to being, you know, we practically couldn't give it away because everybody had too much, more than they could catch.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the example you're bringing up is, well, should we only give half? I mean, I think talking with my members of NEFS 5, about this issue, they were said, oh, well, yeah, it's great to have more fish. I was like, well, you can't have one without the other. I mean, yes, it would be nice everyone given more fish. We understand it kind of changed how the market reflected around that species. But, you know, the negative is, do you want to lose allocation at some point during the year with no warning? I mean, keep in mind, the pollock we kind of knew was coming down the pipe. I have to say, honestly, maybe I'm not aware of things, but when I found about the Georges Bank yellowtail reduction was in a NEFS sector, well, in a sector manager's meeting with National Marine Fisheries Service, and basically was, we've made corrections, we've adjusted your ACE, you should go look on SIMS and see what your new balance is. A little forewarning would have been a little nice to deal with.
Yeah, I just want to quickly comment on that, Doug. It is the magnitude, and I think it depends on the stock. You know, we knew ahead of the season that the pollock tack was way too low, and so we expected more pollock. At least we'd hope we'd have more pollock. So I think, you know, as far as that stock was concerned, it was the magnitude of the correction that really threw the market out of whack. You know, when you're taking fish away, you know, as Dan said and Cindy said, you know, then you're stuck in a position where not only could you be over on that stock, but you might have already traded that fish away, fish that you didn't have anymore. So that becomes very critical. And the other thing you need to look at when you're doing mid-season adjustments is the effect that that has on the other stocks that are quote-unquote choke stocks or the stocks that are commingled with those stocks. And so when you're trying to fish a 16-stock commingled fishery selectively, you have to be very conscientious of, you know, any adjustment in one stock and its effect on the entire suite of stocks that you're managing. And so that's, you know, mid-season, it's very difficult to try to plan for that when you've already made a business model in the beginning of the year based on a certain fixed set of fish that you think you have to work with. So those are my observations.
quickly. We're over time.
One last comment. If you're going to give out mid-season adjustments, we need about another 300,000 pounds of Gulf of Maine winter flounder as soon as possible, and we would welcome a reduction in the leasing price right now because it's out of hand. Thank you.
Great. So with that, we're going to thank all our panelists today. I think we got a lot of really good information, and we're starting here tomorrow morning at 8:30.